Hello and welcome to the Evergreen Way podcast, where we explore how to be a healthy leader for the long haul. My name is Andy Needham. I have the privilege of serving on the team with Converge Northeast. And can you believe it? This is the final episode of the second season of our Evergreen Way podcast. I've learned so much from these conversations. I hope that you have as well. Thanks so much for being a part of this journey. I want to encourage you to go back and listen, season one, season two. If you missed anything, there are just some powerful, powerful conversations that will help you in your leadership journey. May 29th, coming up just a couple of weeks from now, is our Evergreen One Day, and there is still time to register. We would love to see you there. Crossway Christian Church in Nashua, New Hampshire is our host site. We have author and speaker Steve Carter, who will be helping lead the way on that. We'll also have our founding faculty, myself, Dave Ripper, Doug Melder will be a part of that day. We would love to be able to gather with you in person to sit around tables and to talk about these principles that make up the Evergreen Way to help you continue in your ministry right where you are. Well, today I get to bring you a conversation with my friend Josh Freeman. I met Josh a few years ago in my role with Converge. He's one of our global workers serving in Togo, West Africa. And I just love the work that they're doing there. I've actually been able to travel there and see it myself in person. And they are really pioneering a local church multiplication movement. And I think that this conversation will both inspire you about global missions, but also we talk a lot about discipleship. What is a disciple-making movement? And the things that the Western church, that we as Americans can really learn from what God is doing around the world. This is a passion of mine. Josh is just at the forefront of this work, right on the front lines. And I think that this conversation is going to help you in some really, really meaningful ways. So here's my conversation with Josh Freeman from the Sixth Degree Initiative with Converge International Ministries. Today, I have the privilege of welcoming Josh Freeman to the Evergreen Way podcast. Josh, thanks for jumping on.
Yeah, glad to be here. So pumped to get to see you again, Andy. It's been a while.
So Josh, we met a few different spaces, but we actually got to spend some time together in the space and the work that you are doing in Togo, West Africa. So can you give us a little bit, maybe start with what today looks like, the now of what the work that you're in Togo, the Sixth Degree Initiative, and then we can maybe zoom back and kind of how you got there.
Yeah, for sure. So Sixth Degree Initiative, you know, we're with Converge, and so we're a Converge Initiative. And this is actually founded 15 years ago by J.J. and Melissa Alderman, who at that time they were not Converge, but moved down from the, from the U.S. and then brought some leaders, Togolese leaders from the beginning, from the north, where actually JJ grew up. His dad was a missionary for years there. And they brought two key leaders, Jonas and Naka, down to the southern part of Togo into what is known as the voodoo capital of the world. And that's where we do ministry. And so this was known at that time as a place that just was unreached with the gospel. The joke that JJ's dad always says, it was the missionary graveyard. This is a place where many people tried to start stuff, and it just seemed to not go very far. And so JJ, Melissa, Jonas, and Naka came down. And so from the beginning, the heart was disciple making, church planting, local, nationally led. So JJ, Melissa never pastored the church. Ultimately, Jonas was the pastor of this church, and Naka, incredible leaders. I think you got to meet Naka when you were there, Andy, and that's where all the growth has really started. So that's ultimately kind of the history. JJ and Melissa joined Converge several years later into their ministry and built this team called the Sixth Degree Initiative that we get to be a part of. And so, we're a team of nine missionaries right now. Seven of us are full-time global workers. And then we have two-year residents on the ground with us at this point. But so the ministry is that idea. We want to see a gospel movement. We, as a team, we're asking for 190,000 disciples in the voodoo capital of the world, which is Togo and Benin. And so we are in that southern region, and we want to see the light of the gospel break through some of these strongholds that have been here for hundreds of years on what is historically known as the Slave Coast. And we're getting to see God do some incredible stuff. But our role as a team is we are coaches, we are leaders, we are developers. And so we develop transformational leaders in churches. That is our main focus, what we get to do.
Well, you said a lot of things there that we could unpack, but let's start with this, which is how you ended up in Togo, because though JJ and Melissa were part of the initiative of that, and obviously their story overlaps with yours, you're now leading the team in Togo today. So how did God put a heart in you for this work in this place? And talk about that journey a little bit.
So I'm a pastor's kid. I grew up in South Florida. My dad is a pastor, and I always said I would never go into ministry. You know, not because I didn't love Jesus and all of that. I just saw the good, the bad, and the ugly. And a lot of it was ugly. And so I was like, yeah, you know, that's not for me. But, you know, I ended up going to Trinity Baptist College in Jacksonville, Florida, just for soccer. So I got recruited to play soccer there. That was my big thing that I wanted to do with life. And so, but through that time, I just felt like the Lord was, in that first year at college was gifting me and calling me to be a part of vocational ministry. I didn't really know where or what or how or anything like that. So I just dove in into Trinity Baptist Church in their ministry and got to be a part of the student ministry. And then they launched a second campus, and I got to be a part of the launch team and help start a student ministry over there. Just get my feet wet in the church planting side of things. I think that really began to stir in my heart of what this church planting idea was. So through that time, man, just got so much crazy experience. They, incredible leaders who still speak into my life today that I love dearly at Trinity there. And so through that, just really discerning what God was going to have me do after college. And so it was summer before senior year of college that I met JJ Alderman for the first time. He was back in town, and, we got coffee through, you know, mutual friends that connected us. And I remember sitting down, and I was a punk college kid for sure. First thing I said to him was, hey man, don't try to recruit me. I'm not thinking missions. And, I really think he took that as a challenge, honestly, but he didn't, he really didn't. So he gave me books to read, things to think about, pray through and whatnot. And, I just ate it up. Somebody that was willing to invest in me, and I loved it. So, through that time, again, I just really started to land on this idea of church planting. And I really wanted to do something. I think we talked about this, Andy. Like at that time, I grew up in the Bible Belt, love it. But I feel like God was stirring me to go to a little bit more unreached. And I was thinking in the U.S., like Northeast and Northwest, something like that. Just somewhere that is less churched. But I didn't know what that looked like and was really praying. But through that time, just had this burden that it was definitely the Lord putting it on my heart to go wherever I can have the most influence possible with the gospel. That's just, you know, really what I wanted to do. So I talked to JJ again, and he's like, hey man, been praying about this idea, and just want to put it out there. And if you say no, we can still be friends. So don't worry about it. And painted the picture of what we're doing in Togo for the first time. And he got me with, you know, plant a church in America, or come be a part of planting hundreds of churches in a place that doesn't have any. And so that really got me. And I was pumped to join the team at that point. And so yeah, that was kind of my story of how I got there. I had never been to Togo. I say all the time to like interns that come, don't go because you love the place or the people, go because of the vision, the people that you get to do it with, and the leaders that you get to follow along the way. Mm.
That's awesome. I appreciate that, that story, how God directed you. And, yeah. You know, when we, were in Togo, which was just over a year ago, March of 2023, that transition, to your leadership was very, very, new. You know, now you're a year into it, and God's brought really good people around you, which has been awesome to see. And you're an incredible leader yourself. But you used some language there I want to have you unpack when you shared the story of the Six Degree Initiative. I think you kind of said it quickly, and it probably is just normal for you, but I don't know that it's normal for every environment, which is the, you know, from the genesis of the Six Degree Initiative, it was really about building up, equipping, empowering local leaders, and operating as coaches, and I've heard you use the language of like the missionary as scaffolding. Like, can you kind of unpack that a little bit more? And like,
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, I think there's two sides that I'd love for you to talk about, like how you think about it, but then how it actually looks. Cause I think everybody would love the theory of it, but then you have the messiness of actually living it out.
Yeah. You got to see some of that firsthand in Shandy. Yeah. But yeah, so we do, we would view ourselves as scaffolding to this. And this is what we mean is we believe in the church of Togo. We believe in the leaders of Togo. We want to raise them up, not to be dependent on the American missionary or the West, in any way, but because, you know, they are built on the foundation of Jesus Christ, right? So that's from the beginning what we've always said. And so we do. We build in a lot of what we, or everything we do is driven with that end in mind of what would it take to build a thriving church that doesn't need us anymore. So we have no illusion to think that our role and our job is here forever. Our goal is that it disappears one day. So we do. We view ourselves as scaffolding. So that idea of we're helping to build the church, the foundation is laid on Jesus Christ. And then we put the scaffolding to help build the structure. And the whole thing about it, scaffolding, is to help build the building. But the idea is for it to be removed so the building can shine and thrive and do what it was built to do. And so that's our desire to ultimately our theory, our philosophy of how we're doing everything. So we talk a lot about, you know, especially in West Africa where we're at, it's, you know, a pretty volatile area when it comes to politics and coups and things like that. And so we talk a lot as a team, like we plan and work like we're not going to be here tomorrow because anything can change in a second when we're not here. But to develop the strong leaders, we have to invest like we've got nowhere else to go. And so we're investing deeply relationally. So that's a little bit of the how is we are. We're entering into relationships with leaders and coaching them up. It's all about raising the level of leaders, Andy, right? So we're not drifting down. And so we're building leaders and then working through them. So what does it mean to make more disciples and to build more leaders, right? Mm-hmm. So we just continue to have to, we ourselves have to continually growing because the leaders that we're pouring into are growing and the people that they're pouring into are now growing. And there's generations deep of disciples and leaders that we get to work with. And we try to work with the 2% is what we would say. Like who are the top 2% high potential leaders? We can't spend our time with everybody. So let's just pour into them. And that's everything across the board. Like that's kids ministry all the way to pastoral ministry, right? So it's not just working with pastors, but we have an incredible team that are working with kids, right? Mm-hmm. We, you know, a great story. My wife works with kids ministries for churches and basically all of them are run by 20-year-old or younger at this point. Mm-hmm. And she's got a couple of girls that are 16 and 17 who are leading their entire kids ministry, like developing the curriculum and teaching that they're going to do, executing the teaching, but now they're identifying who they're pouring into that are 8 to 10 to 12 that are going to begin to start teaching as well. So that story just kind of is a picture of what and how we're trying to continually work ourselves out of that.
Yeah, I think the other space that I saw that lived out is your sort of stewardship strategy. You know, there's many models to do missions, and this is not to disparage other that may be driven more towards a work of mercy or other things like that. But there was a real intentionality with, you know, for example, prioritizing, resourcing, training, even vocational training over maybe direct funding. And could you speak to that a little bit and kind of just how you guys broadly think about that?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, yeah, that whole vocational training aspect is our goal is not poverty alleviation. That'll happen because transformed leaders have been transformed by the gospel. And that impacts the way they work and use their finances. So we do vocational training because when you ask a leader, what's it going to take to plant a church and have it up there? It's going to be money. We don't have the funding to get there. Well, if this is going to drive itself 50 years from now, and thrive continually, we need to really help build leaders in every aspect, not just in biblical, theological, but also practical. means. So that's really the dream and the thought behind it. And so it's like a three-legged stool, right? So it's always discipleship, because everything we do, leadership development and everything, is in the context of discipleship. We got to teach them business acumen. A lot of these guys have good skills. They just don't know how to run a business and manage funding, and what does that look like? They've never seen it done. So how do we help with that? And then some of it too is the craft. Like, what is the thing that I need to be getting into? How can we get them into some trades or some cultivation and things like that? All of this is local leader run, right? So I am not the most handy guy out there. I don't know how to do any of this. That is not my role. But we are using believers in the church ultimately to gain wisdom from them and try to resource and influence that. So yeah, we do very little, or we do zero. We don't pay our pastors like a salary or anything like that. We do relationship. There is obviously, we don't let people dry and hang in on life, and we love, and that means financially as well, obviously. And we want to ultimately, we don't want to be the ultimate driver of the advancement of the gospel, but we want to help resource it. We want to help catalyze it, or take it off, launch it, right? And so that's the thought, is what do they bring to the table? How are they also, and how do we then put fuel on the fire of what's already happening? So that's a little bit of the heart behind some of that.
Yeah, well, the particulars of that are vastly different in the context of the work that I do. That there's some great principles there that I think church leaders could adopt, and network leaders could think through in terms of, like, sometimes the fastest, what seems like the immediate need of resourcing is really just a short-term fix versus that long-term sort of systemic
Yeah,
approach that you
right.
guys are taking. And on that very note, you compacted the story down very quickly, but one thing that kind of struck me as I engaged with the Sixth Degree Initiative and the work there is it took a long time to get the first church going, and it took a long time to get the next church going. And you can look at things now and kind of see, like, oh wow, look at all this multiplication that's happening, which has its own challenges. Maybe speak to that, because I think that there is a, especially being from a post-Christian part of America too, like, I feel like sometimes we lose heart before the harvest comes. And so maybe you could talk about that a little bit and what that looked like for the Sixth Degree Initiative, getting that first church going and then the multiplication that came later.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I learned so much from JJ on this, right? He would always help us remember, because we all interned in a little bit later to when the success was, we could see it a little bit. And he would always help us remember, like, hey, we stand on the shoulders. This was the missionary graveyard. So all of those people who came and didn't last, they planted those seeds. We stand on their shoulders,
Amen.
and we really stand on the shoulders of JJ and Melissa at this point too, and what they built, what God built. That's the reality, that he built this and we get to steward it. What a gift. So the yeah, exactly. So from first church plant, New Life Church, to second church plant was 7 years. So, and that's just deep work, foundational. I mean, seed sowing like crazy. New Life Church can say in a 5 mile radius, like with all sincere integrity, that every household has heard the gospel. That was the goal. I mean, just lots of seed sowing, lots of evangelism, and which is incredible to be able to say. But that is the foundation. And so you get to build these leaders and develop them, and all the growth has come through New Life Church. And so from New Life Church, 7 years to plant the second church, and then from second church to third church was 2.5, 3 years. And then we started to begin to see the multiplication. And our partnership with the Timothy Initiative, which I think many people are familiar with, is when we really began to see multiplication start to happen. So it was like this foundation was created, and then the explosion started to build on top of that foundation. And with that, from three, it went from 3 to 29 in 2 years, and then they're counting churches and visiting them right now. We're over 80 churches that we are aware of at the moment that are. This is where the complexity of multiplication comes in, is I don't know exactly who we're working with and where they're at. Yeah, we're working on that. But so in the last 2 or 3 years, there's been 70 churches planted. So the multiplication is really beginning to take off at this point. But you're right. I mean, it's a 15-year journey. This is not something that happened overnight.
Yeah. Yeah, it took you 15 years to be an overnight success. So it's the classic kind of line goes. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, a couple of things I appreciate. If you're not familiar with the Timothy Initiative, incredible international church planting movement, yeah. They do incredible work. I love that you guys, and we try to model this with Converge Northeast, like gospel partnerships, it's, you know, kingdom over tribe. You guys model that in many ways. And there's things that Timothy Initiative does great. Their materials are fantastic. Yeah. But you guys are also like that scaffolding that kind of stays with these churches. Yeah. And the other thing, I know when I hear numbers like 80 or whatever, like it just seems like, are these real churches? And I mean, there is a yeah. messiness to it because of humanity, but you guys are very strategic about like confirming what is going on. Like these are, mm-hmm. you go and visit and verify yeah. and, you know, double check the work, so to speak, on that. So I just want to encourage people with that. So can we pivot here? One of the things that, and one of the reasons that I came to visit the Sixth Degree Initiative is that it's one example among many around the world where I think that the global church has a lot to teach the American church, mm-hmm. You know, and vice versa. I think that that's the beauty of the kingdom of God. Specifically, and this is, you know, formation, disciple making movements, these are sort of in some ways become Christian buzzwords, probably for good reason. I'm glad that there's an emphasis on them now. But in, I would say from my experience as someone who grew up in the Northeast corner of America, going to Togo, it was a powerful thing to get to witness firsthand a disciple making movement. So when you think about discipleship, in the context that you're in, what does it look like? And when you hear that phrase, disciple making movement, how do you define that and live that out?
Yeah, it's great. Complex, but great. Yeah. So, disciple making movement, there's lots of different terminologies and whatnot. For us, you know, there's disciple making movement, and then there's church planting movement. That's one and the same for us. So we're not creating a bunch of small groups. We want to see the local church thrive in communities. And so we make disciples, and in making disciples, we gather them into a group, and we disciple and we pour into them, and it turns into a church through that prays together, that worships together, that observes the ordinances, you know, all these kind of things. And so that is where we kind of fall in that. And so with that, I mean, it's a lot of tension. It's relational, like everything about this. And that's the beauty of the culture in Togo, is it is so relational, so communal driven. That, you know, when you talk to a leader who's going to plant a church, and when we say plant a church, like start out like by going into a village who's never heard the gospel before and just start being people, find your person of peace, start somebody that's going to bring you into the community, listen to you, you get to share the gospel, and ultimately open up avenues for you to begin to plant that church with these disciples that you've made. But it's always an emphasis of continual, as you're growing and learning, that we're going to go tell somebody else everything that we're learning. It's this obedience, this mentality of taking this and then also beginning to really apply it. And so that's the culture, the emphasis, I would say, that is happening in this area of the world in our context, is there is a hunger, an absolute hunger to learn, but there is this responsibility that they feel to take the gospel to the community that they might have grown up in or they know people in. It's that relational aspect. And so I have to go because nobody else is going to. And so you see this passion and this heart to say, what I have, I have to share with my community. And so I think there's some beautiful things there, right? As an American coming in, I've learned a lot from the church in Togo. You know, we can be very individualistic in our thought patterns and things like that. And they only think about what's better for the community. Mm. And that's inspiring, right? So I think a lot of what drives in our context, and as you're kind of alluding to that, of we always have something to learn. That's one of the biggest things that I've learned. It's community and relationship will always trump task. Mm-hmm. And so I love to see how that kind of moves in. I don't know if I really answered your question a ton, Andy, on the disciple making movement stuff. But I guess the movement side, here's what we say. It's a Holy Spirit empowered, like he's got to breathe on it to see multiplication happen. And that idea is there's different definitions, like 25 churches wide, 4 generations deep, and that's 100. Sometimes people put a little number of how many years it took to do that. Some people don't. But at the end of the day, that's what it is. It's this Holy Spirit empowered of somehow the gospel wasn't here, and now it is multiplying like crazy because everybody, not just pastors, but lay leaders, just people in the community, are engaged in discipling.
You know, one thing I observed that was unique about Intogo that I think we could learn from was that while there is a regard for pastoral ministry, I don't think it has the same peculiarities as in America, which, you know, I'm obviously for like our pastors being theologically trained and you know, being and
Same.
honoring pastors. Like that's not to say that, but I feel like the distance between the congregation and the pastors in Togo felt a little more like what I read in the New Testament, to be honest with you. So if you observe that.
Oh, absolutely. It is. There's some things that happen there that I'm like, I feel like I'm living the book of Acts right now. That's pretty fun, right? But at times we have rose-colored glasses with some of these things, right? The New Testament is Paul writing to churches that aren't, don't have it all figured out, right? So that's the reality as well. But you're right. You're absolutely right. There is a strong sense of community when it comes to that. There isn't there. All of our leaders, all of our church planters and pastors are co-vocational. Probably always will be. That's just how it is. And so it really is just a part of their life that's been transformative, that is transforming every area of their life. And so you're right. So when you think pastoral, now I want to say we are huge on pastoral training and theological training as well. So is Timothy Initiative, right? So the Timothy Initiative is basically that 2-year, very soft seminary, very practical. And then we have a Bible Institute as well that goes just a little bit deeper in some things that's less accessible for everybody, but accessible for some high level leaders. So, but I think what you're saying, right? Just that I think you're helping me think through the American context as well, how people would hear it. Is it is? It's like this immediate diving into the Word, figuring this out, and going out and being led by the Holy Spirit in a lot of ways. Like, I don't have a box for a lot of the things that we see. It is like reading the book of Acts, and like we see in the early churches, it isn't perfect. And there is a lot of things that need to be continually developed and encouraged as you go.
Yeah, I really appreciate you saying that because I mean, you know, oftentimes you'll hear people like talk about the New Testament church like it was perfect, and I'm actually preaching this weekend on Galatians chapter 2, and you know, Galatians is like Paul's first letter, and the entire thing is him just like dealing with conflict right out of the gate as you know Peter's backsliding and kind of going back on things, and he's calling them out, and you know. I'm actually going to use this example from my time in Togo as I preach, but you know, you guys do legitimately because in Togo, voodoo, like in the Northeast, so you would say Catholicism is sort of cultural. It's not just religious. In Togo, you know, voodoo is not just religious, which it is, and it's very dark, but it's also cultural. And so you guys have had to face, I remember one story you shared about, you know, somebody who was growing in leadership in the church. I don't remember their role. They might have been a deacon or whatever, but and you know, making steps in their faith, and then they had a child, and the pressure from the family was so strong to engage in sort of some voodoo rituals and things like that. And it's sort of that same issue that the Galatian church was dealing with, is like trying to add, you know, Jesus plus anything, you lose the gospel. And I know you guys have had to, you know, perpetually be working on those things.
No, I mean, that is always a tough one. It is, the syncretism is such a difficult thing. It's our pastors are so good at this though, Andy. Like they I mean that story is because a pastor is entering into the life of a young disciple who's leaving voodoo, and his dad's a witch doctor, right? Like, I mean, this isn't easy. This is complete, and it's so communal, like I've been saying. So to go against the family and cultural means is so difficult. They will get outcasted, and that's the beauty of the church getting to be the church. You do get outcasted from your family, but you're adopted into a new one. And you're right. So I mean, I see our pastors do this so well. It's why when we say 190,000 disciples, people ask, like, what does that look like? What does that mean? We would say baptized and reproducing. is would count as a disciple. There's a lot of reasons for that, but at the end of the day, when somebody's coming to faith in this kind of context, the baptism piece is huge, 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 huge for the leaders that lead them through. So it's like a it's a journey. It's at least 6 months, if not longer. And I know there's different theological views on that and whatnot, but this is what the Church of Togo has contextualized for themselves is, and their heart is to help people understand that saying yes to Jesus is not just adding him to the plethora of other idols that you worship, but that he is the Lord and Savior and King of our life. And so it takes a long journey when this has been historically, and most of these people are first generation believers, right? They've never had this in their family. And so there is a long discipleship journey that leads up, man. I love it. So when we do baptism, we do idol burnings. We should do this in America, I think, for sure, but it just looked different. But it is the best thing in the world. So they come together and they say, nope, I'm officially saying we're done with this, and it'll burn their actual physical idols, and then get to baptize them and do that public proclamation of I'm leaving this behind and following Jesus.
Yeah, no, I remember being at one of the more remote churches. I think the most remote church we visited, and the pastor had shared about, something like we've had 11 baptisms and two idol burnings. And I was like, I don't have a part of my spreadsheet for church planting growth in the Northeast that has that's a category for that, but I need to maybe add one. But yeah, that's a really beautiful thing. I was thinking about when you talked about training, the expectation of training. One good example, I was in a meeting recently with a church and a seminary, and just try to get an imagination for what is theological training look like in the future in the United States, and how do we reintroduce it back into the parish? And in some ways, like we're kind of reconstructing those systems in the US. And one of the people from the seminary who had a lot of experience kind of reintegrating, I think theological education is being reintegrated back into the parish, which is beautiful. But she was saying, she's, like when somebody takes a class, like a hermeneutics for the first time, it feels like, because of the sort of culture we've built in America, like an inaccessible reality. And then they realize like how it unlocks the whole of scripture. And they realize, oh, I can do this work and I can understand this. And I think that, again, we need to hold these things in high regard and not dumb them down. But I think we have a gap in American church of people thinking that these things are not available to them. And it's sort of this accidental priesthood is what I call it, where it's like we accidentally kind of overlook Ephesians 4, look up the saints for acts of service, and we miss that. So I think an application for our churches in some ways is how can we make it more accessible? I'm going to a Bible study at a church right now. It's called They do a thing called Monday School, which is their sort of formation environment. And right now we're diving deep on the Trinity, and I'm sitting around a table with people who, two of them were from a UCC background, and they're like, "This is all new to me," but they're diving into the deeper things of God, which is really awesome.
Oh, I love that. That's
So
awesome.
that's great. As you look forward in the Sixth Degree Initiative, like what are some of the things that you guys are like? What are some of the priorities and things that you're working on? Now that you've gone, that long journey to kind of get a measure of momentum, as I love to say, you have new and better problems. So what are the things that you're working on today?
I mean, 80 plus churches is wonderful, and figuring out how do we continue that growth and get to still, as we go a mile wide, it has to go a mile deep. Like, it's not one or the other, it's both. And I don't really know how that works yet, right? So one of the big things that we're focused on right now is we're building a network. It's just the natural overflow of what's happening. And this is completely led by Togo's leaders. So we get to work with some solid leaders that you got to meet that are really designing this. And I mean, we're starting from the bottom up, casting vision. They're developing vision, they're developing strategy. But at the end of the day, here's what this network becomes. It just becomes shared vision. It becomes continual development for the pastor and leader, and it becomes collaboration, accountability. That's what we want to continue happening. So if, like, people often, so how do we work well with TTI and whatnot? So it's, TTI is how we start churches, and then this network is how we strengthen them, right? So in our language is we want it to continue to grow after that 2 year journey, they're entering into this network that does give them that shared vision, continual development, and collaboration and accountability. This is something that we're going to be able to see ultimately sustain the movement. And so that governance, right? Governance, how we're doing finances, all this kind of stuff. This is being led by local leaders, and we're at the beginning stages, right? This is just being formed. But this is the fun stuff that we get to see and see the light at the end, not a light at the end of the tunnel, but like see the end in mind of, we've always said from the beginning, we're not supposed to be here forever. This is going to get us to that place where we have solid leaders that know how to do this and are managing it. We get to be a part of it, but we don't necessarily need to be there anymore. And so, I don't know how long that'll be. God's not made that clear. I think there's a lot of work to be done for sure, but that is what we get to be a part of. The second one that's really fun that I just want to shout out to is we get to be a part of an awesome collaborative effort called Achieve, a church in every village, everywhere, which is something that was dreamed up in the Timothy Initiative world. But there's this coalition of the willing of 22 international organizations that have stacked hands together and said, we want to see a church in every village, everywhere. And that kind of boils down into different contexts or different countries. And so we've been a part of on the front end of this in Togo. And so what this looks like is, if we want to see a church planted in every village everywhere, first we got to do some data tracking of where is there a church and where isn't there a church. And so there's five organizations in Togo right now that we get to work alongside that have divided the country into five parts and are mapping and doing survey work to see where there is a church and where there isn't. And it's going to be digitally put up on a map. If it's green, that means there's a church and there's believers. If it's yellow, there's some believers and no church. And if it's red, no believers and no church. So now we get to finally be very strategic in where we're going to take the gospel. And this is a beautiful thing. We're actually just finished up mapping right now. Like literally a week ago, all the mapping for at least our region and most of the other regions is almost complete. And we're coming together May 3rd. So I don't know if this will be aired before or after, but this meeting is going to happen, and it's where we're inviting all the organizations, as many as we can, organizations and denominations that are already existing in Togo, pull them to the table, show the map, and ask the question, what would it take for all of us to see that there's a church planted in every single village of Togo? Now, we're excited of what that's going to look like and what that's going to be, and we're getting the data back right now to see exactly how many churches we do need to plant, but there's some really strong influence and momentum right now that sees that we could see a church planted in every single village of Togo in the next 10 years, God willing.
Wow. The dry bones of the graveyard of missionaries is rattling with local believers being sent out, which is an amazing thing. Josh, if somebody wanted to, learn more, I want to talk about Six Degree Initiative in a minute, but are there any like books or podcasts or things like that that you have were helpful to you as you started kind of made your journey into this space? That or something that you might give to your interns that you're like, hey, this is something that will help you understand this type of work.
Yeah, that's good. The Evergreen Leadership Podcast. No, I'm just kidding. A couple of books that are highly influential, something like that. I would say the principles from it come out every day in life for us on the field. It's called 3D Gospel. I don't remember the author at this point, but 3D Gospel is one that just talks about what it means. Super short little book too, but the putting to practice evangelism and contextualizing it to the heart language, right? So in the value systems, right? So it breaks down the different value systems in the world, but how do you connect like the gospel and the Bible's beautifully created. And so I love studying the word with my brothers and sisters in Togo, because what they pull out is drastically different than what I would pull out from my value system. So this is a book that helps you kind of read through culture and see how does the gospel speak directly to the heart of this culture. So love that one. When Helping Hurts is a classic one, for sure, that I'm sure that people like to that know of. But this is really what formulated our way of thinking about how do we build be scaffolding? But if you're looking, if somebody's like, hey, what does it mean to be a missionary and whatnot? Gaining by Losing by J.D. Greer is the one that God used in my life. to help me grow a different mindset of measuring not by receiving capacity, but by sending capacity. So that's another one. Discipleship.org has a great podcast that I love to learn and grow from, that infuses discipleship. And it's in the context of America too, in a really good way. So, those are just like some quick ones that I could rattle off for you,
I love that.
that have been highly influential.
Yeah, I mean, the gaining by losing, that's just such an important ethic as we look at in the Northeast and in America, the shortage of pastoral leaders in the pipeline of development. And we really need to, I keep emphasizing, as we've been working with our churches, and I love the heart of our pastors, but we're just continuing to lean into the idea, like, we're not going to be able to buy the next generation of pastors. We have to build them together. And we really need to see that as like our job and our work to do
Absolutely.
together. So, Josh, in terms of the Sixth Degree Initiative, specifically connecting with you, connecting, and you guys have an incredible prayer ministry, which is an easy access point. People want to just be praying. How can people connect with what you guys are doing?
I mean, simply josh@converge.org is my email. Reach out to me directly. I'd love to help in any way we can on this journey. SixDegreeInitiative.org is another great way to see all of our resources and things like that. We talk about the different ways that you engage, that churches engage with us. It's praying, it's giving, it's sending. So join us in prayer. It's not secondary. It is the number one thing. We have prayer networks, and we're looking at multiplying our prayer network. So if you or your church is wanting to join the fight, this is the first way to do it. Let's get in prayer together. And we do this, so reach out to me, and I'll be able to get you kind of plugged into this system where we're developing kind of prayer champions that are championing prayer. And then you get to be a part of live, like join our group text that's getting live messages of what's happening on the field, of what to pray for immediately. We're seeing God do crazy things through that. But then ultimately championing prayer in your context for the movement of God that's happening in Togo. And then giving, and then sending is this context. If you've got we've got an internship, 6-week internship, and a 2-year residency. And so the difference there, I would say, is an internship is for the person in college who's thinking, I don't really know if I want to do missions, but I'm kind of thinking about it. Our desire is for you to come see it, and then you get to be a part of the good, the bad, the ugly of ministry. You get to do dinner at our tables, ministry, everything that we do. Our desire is that you would leave there knowing more of who God wired you to be and how what your role in the Great Commission is and what is your next step. You don't have to have your whole life plan figured out, but what's a good next step based off of those things? And then our 2-year residency program is that person who's like, I know it's missions. I just don't really know what that means or how to do it or where to go. So come, we do, you get to learn language. We learn French. And then you get continued education through a relationship with Kairos University. And then you get to be practically involved in this disciple making movement that we get to be a part of. So those are a couple of ways to get a part of what we're doing.
That's awesome. I'd encourage people too to follow you guys on social media, especially particularly on Instagram. It's a good play to, kind of dip your toe in the water, but you have those deeper dives. I mean, the live chat and stuff like that is pretty awesome. So Josh, thanks for making time today. I know that you're in the midst of wrapping up a busy home assignment and visiting with churches and pastors. So it's always a privilege to be able to talk to you. Thank you for making time today.
Thanks so much, Andy. Love it.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Evergreen Way podcast. On behalf of our entire team at Converge Northeast, it is a privilege to bring you these conversations to help you to be a healthy leader for the long haul. We would love to connect with you. Find us on Instagram at Converge Northeast and feel free to send us a message. It's an easy way to connect. You can also send me an email directly at andy@convergenortheast.org. That's andy@convergenortheast.org. Let us know what resonates with you, as well as any ideas or suggestions for topics or interviews for future episodes. We appreciate it when you follow or subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and know that a positive review is a simple way that you can help more people discover the Evergreen Way. Until next time, this is Andy Needham with Converge Northeast. Thanks so much for tuning in.